Glenn's actually up in the air right now. He was hoping to be able to join us today, but unfortunately, because of his travel schedule, he wasn't able to make it today. But it's all good, because we have a really, I mean, one of the most popular people on call-in that's guest hosting with us, who I'm actually a little bit jealous of, because Katie is constantly neck and neck with us for one of Colin's most popular... Oh, show us a no. Hey, 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 there she is. Oh, damn, I was just talking to her about you. How are you doing, Katie?
Good, you? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. How's it going?
Okay. Good, you?
Pretty good. Although you sound a little bit far away.
You know what? Here, I'm going to take off my headphones. I'm going to not do the headphones, okay? I'm just going to do regular phone, good old-fashioned phone to the ear.
All right.
Hold on.
All right. I hope you're not the one driving.
Oh, no, no, no. You know, I don't even know how to drive. Isn't that pathetic?
Wait. No, you're kidding me, right?
No. I'm a native New Yorker. It doesn't make it excusable, but it's, like, a teeny bit more excusable.
Oh, boy. All right. I'm glad that you're able to have the phone to your ear and not be driving, because that's how a lot of people in, like, rural Ontario would do it. Anyhow, great speaking to you. And, yeah, I've been listening to your shows over the last couple of weeks, and it sounds to me like you're witnessing a slowly raveling insanity, just as I am and a few others are. I'm noticing that, like, Michael Tracy is gradually coming around. I think he's finally discovered anti-imperialism, but the back doorway is strange.
Yeah, well, we welcome everyone to with open arms. Yeah.
Yeah, you know,
it's a safe space.
It's definitely not a safe space. There's a lot of ways to arrive here, but when you get here, we're glad for it. So, yeah, there is that. I noticed that he said, just yesterday, in fact, that, you know, if what was been said about the police in Uvalde, Texas, is true, that they not only did not go into the school while there was a shooter inside murdering children, but actively stopped parents from trying to get into the school to rescue their children, well, then he now sees what the Abolish the Police folks were talking about. And I'm like, oh, my God, finally. You know?
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Watershed moment.
Yeah, no kidding. But, what were your... I mean, before we go ahead and start taking callers, because we did promise last week that we were going to have the show be 100% driven by callers. But, yeah, I wanted to get your sense as to what's going on.
With what?
With the unrest. I mean, there was the shooting in Buffalo, which I wanted
Abilene
to cover.
World.
Yeah, God. And then the shooting in Uvalde, Texas, and so on. I think there's a lot more to it than just people making a snap decision to go off and kill total strangers. I think it's actually... like it's now ingrained into the American body politic that this is how you express yourself at the conditions that are surrounding people in America.
Yeah.
Like the malaise and the utter like brokenness of Western society is expressing itself through school shootings and public shootings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I wasn't sure what your thoughts were there.
Yeah, these mass shootings. It's true of violence and a history of violence, and we solve things through violence. And then we also have just a real availability of these weapons,
right,
which is a kind of perfect storm.
Well,
I don't have anything that deep or original. I don't have anything that deep or original to say about it.
Yeah, there is that, and I kind of have some of the same thoughts.
It's just it's horrifying, and what the police did obviously was also horrifying.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same page, but I think there's also this inability for a lot of people to recognize that this is not going to get solved by what they call common sense gun legislation, because when you say that, what needs to be done is to restrict access to quote-unquote assault weapons, like the AR-15. That always tends to be the weapon that everybody knows. And it is often used in mass shootings, but it's by far, it's far from the only one.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, all right, so let's say that you go ahead and restrict AR-15s. First of all, if you don't grandfather clause the already legally purchased AR-15s into this restriction, then good luck getting those weapons out of people's hands. And now you're having to go essentially door to door and retrieve those weapons to do like a first gun buyback program, like what Australia did. But then the second part is, so assuming that you are not going to grandfather them in, then you do grandfather them in, and there are far more weapons in the hands of Americans than there are Americans. Right? Like, there are far more AR-15s, there are far more pistols and shotguns. The population of America is, you know, 360 odd million people, and the number of weapons that Americans own is approaching 500 million. Like, it's almost a half a billion weapons.
Yeah.
So how do you get them all out of people's homes? How do you get them all off the street?
Yeah, it seems like a Sisyphean problem.
Yeah.
But maybe we just have to do something outrageous and unthinkable, because it is such an unthinkable problem.
Well, I mean, somebody that I consider a friend, who's a member or a former member of Parliament in Canada, Adam Vaughan, had said that, you know, one drastic measure that the U.S. is probably going to have to take is consolidating the military, like organizing the military to get these weapons out of people's hands.
Yeah.
And like, so the same military that, like, drone bombs weddings in Afghanistan and Pakistan, that committed war crimes in Syria, you want to go turn them loose on the American public in violation of the Posse Comitatus Act?
Right.
Good luck with all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would cause an interesting response.
So, yeah, again, like, yeah, it's you call it Sisyphean. I think it's actually part of a strategy of tension, and we can get into that in a bit. But I also wanted to make sure that we got to Jess's question. And I saw that Rena had come up to the caller queue as well. We do want to make sure that this episode is primarily dedicated towards people that want to call in and have your questions answered, because the last episode was primarily myself and Glenn. So yeah, if you have questions, comments, etc., please feel free to hop in. Jess, you can unmute yourself by tapping the microphone icon in the lower right-hand corner.
Hey, yeah, thanks for taking the call. Yeah, I just, thinking about the shooting in Buffalo, I used to live there, and I probably worked in that area where the Tops was. And I think my first job in my field was at a methadone clinic, in the city of Buffalo, and it's a very impoverished place.
Right.
And I really haven't, like, looked into the shooting a lot. One thing I do know, the shooter was from Cattaraugus County, New York, right?
Right.
Yeah. So my first reaction is like, so the shooting happens in this incredibly impoverished place, and Cattaraugus County is an incredibly impoverished place, right next to a Native American reservation. I have family, and I've spent a lot of time in Buffalo, but also in Cattaraugus County. It is just incredibly impoverished. I just kind of feel like, I just wanted to, you know, I don't really understand this kind of stuff, but like, I kind of feel like no one really cares about either of these places. And it just kind of seems like the perfect storm when it comes to those kind of factors. I just wanted to get your feedback on that.
I think that the impoverished conditions that a significant portion of the United States finds itself living in, I think the downwardly mobile middle class, and even the tenuousness of the upper middle class, which is rapidly finding itself, you know, losing jobs, getting laid off, finding its benefits slashed, and so on, especially in service industries where there is no collective bargaining. Like, it's not very often, aside outside of public service, that a service industry, things like financial services, tech services, etc., now that they have primarily replaced primary industries, which were heavily unionized, you're seeing the causes of that in the broad swaths across places like Pennsylvania and West Virginia, and also upstate New York, where people who were working factory jobs, or whose parents and grandparents worked factory jobs, well, those opportunities aren't there anymore. And the homes that they bought for, in today's dollars, practically pocket change, The real estate prices are way out of whack with what people actually earn. Rental prices are completely out of whack with what people earn. And they're always going to turn to some malefactor, whoever it is that they hear about on cable news or on AM radio, to tell them that the reason that your life looks like this is because of these people. And the fact that so many of them are either on the radar for federal agencies like the FBI, the fact that so many of them were surveilled and sometimes even contacted before they went on these mass shooting sprees, that they will post to social media, they'll post to Discord rooms, they'll go on places like 4chan, which are also heavily surveilled, and they do show up, like people know who they are. The fact that they are able to go out and commit these shootings, I'm having a hard time not believing that to some degree it's intentional. And
yeah, and just to cut in for a minute, with the Brooklyn shooting on the subway, I felt the same way because he had been on the watch list, right? And like, just like the way that I don't want to be like, you know, like completely like a conspiracy theorist, but it's like, I've just worked a lot with really mentally ill people, and like watching that guy's YouTube videos, the guy's thoughts are completely disorganized, and kind of hearing about his past like towards Brooklyn, that's a pretty, if that was all planned, I don't know, like that's a pretty complicated plan for him to get to that point. Yeah. And I just kind of felt like, you know, kind of with like Omar Mateen or the Boston Bombers.
Offended or assaulted.
You're breaking up pretty heavy there.
We do have to look at where it comes from. If
we
as a support.
Happy to lock that line. There's more training.
Marco business and... Trafficking and fast
people then before jumping to any conclusions. Actually been turned into an occupied.
Through Detroit. Fugitive arrest and slave catching to become what we know as policing today. And I don't think that people are willing to go beyond what we consider like the Jim Crow period or go beyond like the civil rights era to understand that policing has always been an instrument of subjugation and almost always always accompanies fascism. Wherever you see increased police authority and increased police presence, that's where I was going to say it almost always. Operation Gladio, the Unholy Alliance. Lucian Gladio to modern American policing, especially as it pertains to mass shooters, as it pertains to far-right hate groups or anything to that effect? No, because people have such a deep need to believe in their institutions, that their institutions are fundamentally good. They're just corrupted by bad actors. And it's impossible for them to understand that their institutions are there for the purpose of subjugating. And this is an area that Glenn and I think, agree on. This is where we see eye to eye. You know, if you're somebody who watched the January 6th flash mob on the White House and thought, hang on a second, we actually need to give more money and more funding and more respect to police, as happened. I mean, the same liberals that were the previous year trying to talk about abolition in such a way that it comported with their ideas about reform. They were trying to hop on the Black liberation bandwagon and seem like they actually deeply cared about Black people's lives and about the lives of marginalized. They're going to suddenly change the celebrities have a sad about it. I'm way over it. I got over it during COVID, and for some reason, this idea of like celebrity culture as like intermingling with our broader political culture, like they're one and the same and we have the same interests. I'm not sure exactly how that crept back into our consciousness, but I really don't fucking like it, especially since, like, you know, while we were going through lockdowns, while people were, you know, passing out and dying in their that people had no way to pay for funerals, that student loans, even though they were on hold, people had no way to pay them back because they were losing jobs. And all these celebrities wanted it to do is get on fucking Instagram and sing Imagine. Like, I'm way the fuck over it. I don't want to see these people. I don't want to hear about them.
Yeah, I figure by Monday, the news will be back on Johnny Depp and Amber Heard.
Oh, Christ. Yeah, that's an entire episode. The fact that that's even like in the American consciousness to begin with is just, thanks a lot, Scott. I really do appreciate that.
Thanks. Thank you for taking my call.
Anytime. All right. Rena. Oh, hey, Rena, how are you doing?
Hi, Q. Nice to talk to you again. If Katie can hear me, nice to see her. So Glenn is shunning you today, Q. I think that shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah.
Glenn has forsaken all of us, and shame on him. I've been curious about something, so I actually looked it up. 32% of Americans personally own a gun. These are recent figures, 2021. If you add in family members who live in a house where somebody owns a gun, then it's 44% of Americans live in a house with a gun. But actually, a more interesting statistic is a third, a third, a third. A third of Americans own a gun. A third of Americans say they might get, another third of Americans say they might get a gun at some point. And the remaining third say, no, I would never have a gun. So that's pretty interesting. And of course, the numbers of actual guns are enormous. But it has always been my conviction that the reason the numbers are enormous is because most people who own a gun own.
If you fly a flag like that, you know, they definitely know your license plate number and they're going to look for a reason to fuck you up. But at the same time, I think that takes more courage to fly that flag than any of those officers demonstrated in Uvalde.
You have any thoughts on what's actually going to happen to any of these people? I think they should crawl in a hole and die of shame. But
they're going to retire on full pensions. Nothing's going to happen to them.
I can't imagine how you could get up in the morning and strap on your
service
cot level. Belt, and go back to work. You know, citizens of Uvalde, you know, get a big bushel basket of rotten tomatoes and start throwing them at these people. Honestly, what a joke!
Here's the thing.
What a joke. And I know they're like this. I know this.
Yeah.
No, it's all right. I'm just ranting at this point.
Protect and serve is. I can't believe you because it's coming from you. Yeah. I know that you know your history because like we've had conversations and I know you know stuff. But I would highly recommend looking up the murder of Ronald Stokes by the LAPD. And that was the year before the LAPD adopted the serve and protect.
Wow. Another thing that's interesting is I think naive people think that the George Floyd protests actually did something and that cops have actually changed their behavior. And yeah, they haven't. Yeah. There's many police murders now after all that, you know, the whole summer of those protests as there were before.
Yeah.
I think we're still well on track for over 1,000 people to be killed in this country by cops, most of them black or brown, most of them unarmed. And nothing has changed. So yeah, I agree with you that I don't think this is going to make any difference.
The only thing that changed is public perception. Aside from that, I mean, the rate at which police kill people has not changed. Like the growth of police killings has gone unabated since 2020. There has not been a cessation. There hasn't been a slowing down in the growth of.
Right.
So, you know, you're 100% right. And unfortunately, you know, what most people are concerned with is Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. And when something like this happens, it's like people live in a fishbowl, you know, and they take one lap around the fishbowl and they completely forget everything that happened before it. How the hell can you advocate for sending Javelin missiles to Ukrainian civilian militias that include neo-Nazis that have been sprung from prison, by the way, like the Tornado Battalion, that were engaged in some of the most like heinous and barbaric acts of sexual depravity against civilians that I've seen or heard of in my lifetime. On the one hand, you want to make an argument for putting guns, ammunition, and rockets in their hands, and then you're surprised when you're clamoring for that violence abroad is followed up by violence at home. I don't know how people can be surprised by that personally, but
I don't know either. You need to ask Chris Hayes that question.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Because he's apparently baffled.
Chris Hayes is a friend of mine said this. He's like a newborn baby deer that is born every day new to the ways of the world. You know,
willful ignorance.
He's a golden retriever. He's just a big puppy. He's probably the only person that would consider dumber than Chris Eliza. And anybody who knows what I think of Chris Eliza knows that I think absolutely nothing. But Marina, thank you very much. I appreciate your call and happy to chat whenever.
Back at you, Q. Thanks.
Thank you. All right. John, what you got for us, buddy? And if you have any trouble with unmuting, the mute button is...
There we go. Got it. Let's see, where do I want to start? I agree with everything you've said, and I, if I'm not mistaken, Katie's also does the Monday morning show. But anyway, I love, her. I'm beginning to like you. I agree with everything you said. What I wanted to start with, and it may be a bit obscure for the listeners, but I want to reference the Stanford experiment as far as what happens in infrastructure and how it molds people into the norms of the structure as opposed to the people that are hired changing the infrastructure. My concern is with the police department, they're not going to allocate funds for mental health. I presume they're just going to get more military-grade weapons to... I don't know what the situation would be to alter these institutions that are so ossified and unresponsive to human needs in this day and age when the wealth disparity is so great. How even academia, which is in the hands pretty much scientifically of big pharma, I mean, all these conspiracies to keep the power elites in their same position, it seems to me it's getting more and more obvious that politicians don't even listen to the polls anymore. They used to grudgingly sort of give support. But I see the Democrats in particular as that they're not responsive to even people that support gun use want to see background checks being somewhat effective to apply the laws that are already there. It seems to me Congress doesn't care because they're all on the take. They could give a shit. They won't vote for voting rights. They won't vote for minimum wage. They won't vote for Medicare. And they always find somebody to take the blame, where it's Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin. There's always somebody that the Democrats can hide behind and still shovel money into their campaigns.
The rotating villain.
Yes, correct, correct. So, I mean, I guess what my question in a roundabout way is, what can be done to change these situations that the imbalance becomes not less imbalanced, but more imbalanced to the point where I think it's going to squeeze lower class and middle class people so hard, I think eventually that these institutions might crack because they need to either change or broken up. So I don't know what you do with that kind of question. I just appreciate being on here. I love this format. Thanks, you guys.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it. First of all, glad you're back, Katie. Did you
have any thanks.
Thoughts? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is really depressing, and I guess it's not. These are such, like, I don't have anything that original to say. Wow, I'm really upping myself here. But I think
could you stop? Because at some point I'm going to have to, like, be your PR person.
I need a hype man.
Against yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that we have to be, you know, a lot of people are very frustrated with electoralism. I am also, and I get that. And I think we have to just be doing as much organizing as possible to force politicians to do the right thing. They're not going to, obviously, left on their own. And there's lots of times when, even when there's a lot of organizing, they don't. But that is the only way these things ever change. So that's...
Here's the thing. I have no confidence whatsoever that without a change to the Clinton Senate, that anything substantial will ever get passed. Essentially, you have to have a supermajority U.S. now. And they could change these cloture rules so that filibusters are not simply, like, a thing that can be lodged without actually engaging in the process of you piss yourself to hold up a vote, which ends up passing anyway the moment that you sit down. The spirit of the filibuster has completely been lost to the will of a recalcitrant minority. But even if you were to be able to pass what people call sensible gun legislation, and for a lot of people it looks like the Australian gun buyback, and people have to understand that the context of the gun buyback in Australia is one in which Australians, I don't think, there was a frontier culture in Australia, and there was a very strong self-defense culture in Australia. But Australia is, aside from the Aboriginal people that they essentially, in fits and starts, wiped out or stole land from, didn't feel that they had to protect themselves from invaders. Australia is an island, and it's surrounded by a hell of a lot of ocean. So this is, you know, the context of this is way back in the 1990s. 1990, I want to say it was 96, was the mass shooting, and then the gun buyback was shortly thereafter. So if you don't have this invisible other, this either government tyranny or these outside agitators, interlopers, and usurpers that are trying to take over your country, that are corrupting your national character and outbreeding your people such that you will be obsolescent within a matter of decades if you don't do something about it, without that outside threat, it becomes a lot easier to make an appeal to people that you should hand over your guns. So the buyback program was essentially, the government figured out a mill rate for what they would pay people to get their rifles, shotguns, etc. And for those people who had illegal weapons, they could hand in their weapons without being charged. So they would receive amnesty for just handing in their illegally obtained weapons. That will never happen in the United States, because you do have a social condition which, whether you're a liberal or conservative, there is this sort of agreement that there are people that are coming from outside who are not American in character, conservatives don't believe that they can be made American without going through the process of immigration legally, as they say. And liberals believe that they can be made American by engaging in hard work and contributing to their communities and local economies. But what they do fundamentally believe is that there is necessity for people who come from outside to become American in order to fit into American society. And as long as you agree on that, as long as you agree that there are people in your country that are not fundamentally American, then there is going to be this tension between Americanness and outsiders. And knowing that, I don't think it's possible that a gun buyback program, even if it passed the Senate and the president signed it into law, that it actually would work. All right, not sure if you had any further. Sorry, I feel like I just like, I might have talked John into submission there. But John, I really do appreciate the question. And I think we can take probably about two more callers because I do have a hard out at 5:45. Manuel, you can go ahead and unmute. Buttons in the lower right-hand corner.
How's it going, Q? I pretty much wanted to ask about two articles. I've been seeing, like, it mentioned on Twitter, and I've been seeing the articles, but I'm not sure if they've been verified. One of them discussed how cops were going into the school to get their children out instead of allowing and denying parents not only the right to try to save their children, but not evacuating other children with them. And the other one was that the shooter wasn't wearing body armor at all. And I mean, like, while both of those are believable, I can't imagine. I mean, it means nothing in the long run for defunding the police. I mean, right now the NRA is hosting their convention, and like already two of the CEOs have used this to call for more funding for police and security forces.
I want you to hold that thought. The thing that is really frustrating is the amount of people who are just like, how can the NRA be so heartless as to hold their convention after this has happened? How dare they? And I'm like, do you know who these fucking people are? Why are you upset by the people who have always been doing this shit, continuing to do this? Did you think they were just suddenly going to go all conscience? I don't understand the constant like incredulousness and shock and awe at people who make a hell of a lot of money by conditions being what they are, continuing to encourage conditions to stay as they are. Sorry, go ahead, Emmanuel.
I actually heard you talk about this on like one of your last podcasts, like last week. But like I've also had friends who are right wingers, and in my case, I actually had fascists as friends. And for some reason, they are completely able to understand and have the conversation with that. You know, the NRA, you know, might be a horrible institution, but at the end of the day, it's all about profits. And that's what they care about. It's profits and, you know, quote unquote,
lobbying liberty. Organization. They are a lobbying organization for arms manufacturers. So why wouldn't they? And yes, they absolutely do want more weapons on American streets. My whole thing is, the other side of the coin from the fact that I think effective gun legislation even if it was effective on paper, would not be effective in practice because of the reasons I just outlined. I don't think that people are going to comply with mandatory buyback programs. I absolutely don't think. The other part of that is, so now we're in a situation where people who already agree with the necessity for gun control will be the ones to say, all right, well, we shouldn't have these guns. And by and large, they don't have those guns. Because as Rena mentioned earlier, you know, it's really only about a third of Americans that own all of these guns. So you can say all of that, and it's, you know, it sounds really good to say in public, and people believe that you're a good person for saying it. But now you've created a situation where all of the fascists are the ones that have the guns. And I'm just not cool with that. So I don't give a shit whether the NRA is happy about the fact that people who should be arming themselves or at least learning how to defend themselves might consider doing so now. And I've brought this up multiple times, like Chelsea Manning, you know, tweeted a few weeks ago that trans women should be arming themselves. And I'm in 100% agreement. I think anybody who considers themselves to be under attack by the state or by their fellow people should know how to defend themselves. And people get really upset about that because they're like, oh, are you an NRA shill now? Well, I don't really care whether Big Gun or like Big Martial Arts Studio make any money off of the fact that I need to protect my own life. Manuel, you were friends with fascists, bro?
This person who self-identified as a fascist, I'm going to throw you for a loop. He's half black. Raised by his disabled mother.
Okay.
Raised by what? His disabled white mother.
Okay.
In the projects. Quite literally the worst projects where I'm from, which isn't that bad, but I'm from Yonkers originally, so Slow Bomb,
yeah.
Where, you know, Jadakiss is from. So
I know where you're, I mean, when you said Yonkers, I know where you're from.
Yeah. Like, Raising, like, probably the worst projects where people actually have been murdered and killed in front of him. And he identified it as a fascist. Well, I want to say around the time Trump got elected, because he's told me, you know, he said he would love to go back to the 60s. I'm like, you're half black. He's like, yeah, I could pass. I'm just like, sir, there's still that curly head in your hair and think you're Italian, yeah. Irish, or half black, and you're not passing. And I asked him honestly, like, would you rather be a fascist or a communist? Because at that point, I was actually just getting rid of my liberal ideology. He's like, yo, I'd rather identify as a fascist any day. At least then I get to be, not his words, but I know him well enough in his thought process. At least then he'd get to be, like, seen as a white human and have some value in society.
Yeah, I forget. There was another mass shooter, or intended mass shooter, that left the manifesto, and I think he was foiled, and I forget his name off the top of my head. He was also mixed, and I can understand how they end up like that. I don't sympathize with it in any way, but I can see the logical progression of events that has people end up like that. So, I mean, you know, shout to you. That's a lot more tolerance than I would have been able to exercise, but... All right, there, bro. Well, I appreciate you. I want to be able to move on because I can take probably one more caller before I have my heart out at 5:45. Thanks a lot, Emmanuel. Appreciate you.
No problem.
All right, Steve, what you got for us?
Hey, Q. Hey, Katie. Thanks for taking my call. We're here from Oakland, California.
Hey.
And, I've known and people around here have known for a very long time. As you probably know, Oakland's a very riot happy kind of town. So a lot of times when stuff happens in the national news, we tend to get, you know, riots around here in Oakland. And, we've watched the police for a very long time, you know, they always protect the fancy businesses downtown. They never stop any of the rioters from smashing houses and ethnically owned businesses and so on and so forth. So for a lot of us here that have been, you know, out here on the streets of Oakland for a long time, we've known. You know, that the police are not there to protect you. They're there to protect private property, capital, specifically, you know, down like where the jewelry stores are at and all that stuff, the fancy ones, you know, all that kind of fancy businesses and all that shit down town. But my hope and my question to you is, to both of you guys, I know I'm not talking about politicians. I know they're not going to do shit, but my hope is that this recent tragedy will help people disavow people of this bullshit notion that police are there to protect you or that police are there to stop crime. Cause we know more police does not equal fucking stopping crime, right? They prevent very little crime. They didn't prevent this crime and they don't protect people. And so my hope is that the little bit of thing, a little bit of glimmer of hope that could come out of this tragedy is that more people will be disavowed of this lie that a lot of us have known for a very long time, that the police are not there to protect you. Do you think that there's any hope that might move the needle, at least on the public perception?
I think that there's a segment of the population that gets that inherently.
I want the needle moved on the people who don't get it. That's what I'm hoping that maybe they'll see that, because this is so blatant that these people are such fucking useless cowards.
They sit around and watch MSNBC, and unfortunately, like, it turns your brain to mush. They'll watch CNN and hear a guy like David from, I think it was yesterday or this morning, I forget which, it's all running together for me, you know, had tweeted out that, like, oh, you know, while these officers obviously acted dishonorably, you know, we should not call police officers cowards. Get the fuck out of here. But David Trump is, you know, he's a thought leader that's welcome on CNN anytime. You know, this war criminal who oversaw an operation that had a Uvalde happening on a daily basis in Iraq, has some moral scolding to offer in terms of the way that you should talk about police officers that refused to go into that school and save lives. And as long as people continue to consume that media, and I have no faith that people will on a mass level refuse certain media, they'll talk about how much they hate CNN and how much they've disappointed them, but they'll continue to watch. So I don't really have a whole lot of faith, and I think it's really more the responsibility of people who know better to try and like spread that mass consciousness. It's not going to happen spontaneously.
I think Oh, I was just going to say maybe there's some opportunity for people to use this as a teachable moment. I mean, as terrible as it is, obviously. But I think there are some people who have CNN brain or whatever, or MSNBC rot, who we can't reach. But I do think that there are probably some people out there who are, you know, open, abolition curious, perhaps, and that this is a pretty telling example of a dramatic example of police not being there to help. So I agree with what you're saying, Anthony, in terms of how it's still on us to make the argument. But I think maybe this can be used as one of the arguments.
Yeah. I think it is a pivotal moment that can, and I don't even like to say the word, and I'm not trying to like language, but, you know, I think that I think that we can use, people are meaning making machines. People love, right. Like they are just by nature will take absurd tragedies, things that happen for absolutely no good reason whatsoever, and try to make meaning out of it. And I think that people's impulse to do that can be redirected towards examining their own and the propaganda that they've been raised with, this idea that cops are fundamentally good and police are here to protect us. I think this could be a wake-up call. You're right. Like, it won't emerge spontaneously. It is the responsibility of people who know better to be able to explain that in ways that they can understand. I am an abolitionist myself. But I don't think that it's practical. A lot of people, for example, when they were talking about police abolition in the 2020s, were saying, oh, well, we just need to expand our imagination. What does that mean? Right? Were they saying, you know, read Alex Vitale, you know, read Abolition Democracy by Angela Davis? Like, were they analyzing those texts and trying to give people examples from that? Or were they making, you know, principled and firm stances on how all of the brutality and mass violence that we're seeing is a natural, not even just a byproduct, but like a natural formation of capitalism. They weren't making that argument.
It's necessary for capitalism to work. We have to have mass murder and mass death and mass fascistic enforcement on a global scale, not just on a local nationalistic, on a global scale, in order for our version of capitalism to be able to continue to work. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
So this is all intertwined. Yeah. With the war machine and capitalism and the oligarchy, it's all very much intertwined. And a little last question, quick question. Sure. Just, I know you got to get out. How did he get the money? How did this 18-year-old get the money for all of that? I've seen this by people in comment sections, but I've not seen it in the media. I don't see the media asking anywhere, where did the kid get the money to get these things?
Yeah. I mean, okay, so I don't know what model of AR-15, because AR-15 is a design, but it's not a brand. So I don't know what model of weapon he had. Usually guns like that will run you anywhere between like the high 700s to the low 3000s, depending on like what
features you
get. Yeah, exactly. And what accessories come with it. I don't know.
It just seems fishy. You know, two of them and a shit ton of ammo, and the kid is only 18. Yeah. And
ammo, ammo is not expensive. Ammo is actually fairly cheap. I doubt he made the ammo himself, but to get ammo is not difficult. The barrier to entry is just whether you can afford the rifle. So I don't know, bro.
Yeah, if I was conspiracy minded there, that part always does kind of strike me as very fishy.
Yeah.
There's so many fishy aspects of this thing, but I think that is largely just an outgrowth of them being so, not transparent about what actually went down. And basically, as more information has come out, fucking lied to us in the beginning, in the first hours of this tragedy, and have said all kinds of things that they've had to completely walk back now. So I think that's also maybe what makes it look like a bigger conspiracy than it actually is. But it's really just the failure to do what they fucking are supposed to do.
The shooting in Buffalo and the shooting in Uvalde, it's like they're both people call them like chains of failures. They say that there's like failures at every step, and I'm just like,
I'm working out.
I don't know. It seems to me like everything is working just fine, because I guarantee in a month we are not going to be talking about this. We're going to be talking about something else. There's going to be some
other newer,
feature. Yep. Yeah. I mean, I said the exact same thing about Buffalo. I said as soon as there is a newer tragedy, they're going to stop talking about Buffalo. Lo and behold, you know, they were talking about Will Smith smacking the shit out of Chris Rock at the Oscars for longer than they were talking about the shooting.
1,000%. And is it any surprise that the white shooter was able to live and the brown shooter wasn't? Is that a surprise?
As far as I'm concerned, like I'm not too fussed about whether the shooter lives or dies. Like, you know, saying that, oh, well, you know, they walked out alive. I think whether they live or die is kind of a byproduct. I think it's more a matter of the shooter. Are they able to, is the shooter able to succeed in the first place? I think that's the function that we ought to be looking at. I think a lot of people are looking at, well, why aren't, mass shooters, but also like white criminals, why aren't they treated with the same level of brutality that black people experience?
Exactly.
And I think that's not an important question to ask, because you're asking, why does a system that you say is designed to work against black people, why is it?
Yeah, it already devalues them at every level.
It's tautological. Like, I don't think it's there's no sense in asking that question. But I think, yeah, it's a matter of asking, like, how did these succeed in the first place?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Katie, did you, I know, because I do have to go, I got to bring my daughter to gymnastics class and so on, but did you have any final thoughts before we go? So, and thank you for sticking this one out. I know that you're making your drive to upstate New York, and you hit some dead zones, but I really appreciate you sticking it out.
Oh yeah. Thanks for having me. Sorry. Right. As you did that, the dog started barking. This is like a comedy of errors between car being loud, losing reception, the dog barking, but I would love to do this again. Have you on the show on the Colin Katie Helper show that I have on Colin and on my regular show. Yeah.
Thank you for coming by. And I mean, you can ask me to come by whenever. You know how to reach me.
Okay. Yeah. Right. I'm just doing it in public to make it official.
Got you.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Katie. And Anthony, Lance, and Andrew, sorry we weren't able to get to your calls. But I mean, if you on our next episode, just like hit me or Glenn up ahead of time, and we'll be sure to bump you ahead in the queue. But everybody, have yourselves a good weekend. Be safe. And we will talk to you soon.
Thank you for taking my call. You guys have a wonderful
weekend.
You too.